Absolute Power by Mark Tavener, starring Stephen Fry and John Bird.
Clive, we at Prentice McCabe are idealists. Our ideal is to make as much money as possible.
Yes?
From serving clients.
Of course.
No, not in your case, of course. Clive, what was it I told you to do?
You called me into your office and said, we have been commissioned by the organisers of the annual varsity boat race to sex up the event.
Quite.
To give it an image relaunch, to give it tabloid appeal.
Precisely.
So I did.
Clive, what in the name of aquatic insanity possessed you to introduce a shoal of piranha between Putney and Moorfields?
I did stress that the piranha were optional. In any case, it worked.
It did not work.
Have you seen the papers? Boat race carnage wins ratings battle. The slaughter in the water. BBC chiefs defend nibbled cocks fiasco.
And the fatalities?
Of course I regret the fatalities, Charles. They were not part of the master plan.
And the baseball bats?
Well, I looked at tapes of old boat races and I thought, what this show needs is violence.
Yes, I know the feeling. Indeed, I'm getting that feeling right now.
The baseball bats were fundamental to the concept. Last year, it was the boring varsity boat race. This year, it was the violent varsity boat race. The full-body contact boat race. Can I explain the thinking?
Clive, your thinking could not be explained by Dr. Robert Winston after a performance-enhancing drug. I had hoped that by now you would be ready to take on a greater share of the agency's responsibilities, given that we are about to be one partner short.
Morning, Charles. Morning, young...
Clive.
Thing.
Morning, Martin. How are you?
A bit demob happy, actually. After all the years, I can't bear the tears to fall and all that. Anything happening?
I am remonstrating with young Clive.
Ah, well, you carry on. I'll just pack up a few things.
Clive, it gives me no pleasure to say this, but I'm going to have to give serious thought to your position.
Softly, I will leave you. Softly.
Martin.
Sorry, Charles.
Clive, unless things improve, I shall be forced to take steps.
For my heart would break.
Martin.
Sorry, you want me to put a sock in it?
Only if the sock is filled with fast-acting poison. Clive, we'd better leave this until later.
Right.
You know, it's a most odd feeling, suddenly becoming a best-selling author.
Yes, yes, I'm sure it is.
You seen the Times this morning?
Oh, I've been a little preoccupied with the tabloids, actually.
Martin McCabe's The Notion of Nation is the surprise publishing smash of the year. Part scathing critique of New Britain under New Labour, part pub crawl, it has taken the book buying public by storm and made the author a rich man. I particularly like the last bit.
I am extremely happy for you.
Thank you, Charles. Yes, I shall think of you all slaving away while I'm lounging by the swimming pool, sipping the champers.
Yep. Urgent meeting required. Archie. Martin, I'm unsure whether Archie has just prevented a suicide or a homicide, but either way, I'm going out.
Is it something I said?
Charles, over here.
Ah, over there.
You sure this is safe?
Of course this is safe. This is a county cricket ground at the height of the season. There's nobody here at all.
Charles, I hold you personally responsible.
For what, exactly?
For this. The Notion of Nation by Martin McCabe. Have you read this outrage?
No, I've had very little choice. I've had it rammed down my throat for the past 6 months.
Listen to this. Take your seat on the gravy train of Blair's Britain. Or rather, don't. You're not a crony, then no seat for you. The gravy train is the only train in Britain that runs on time and you're not allowed on board. You paid for the track, you paid for the train, you bought all the tickets, but you may not travel on this service. Your MP can get on. After all, his train travel is free because you're paying for
it. Yes, Archie, I do get the point.
This is the gravy train. Political groupies and hangers-on only. You're a taxpayer, no chance.
Well, I agree the tone is slightly peevish.
Slightly peevish? So it's bacon butties for you and a 9-course banquet for two Jacks Prescott. Have you seen what it says on the back?
Archie, you don't feel you're overreacting a trifle, do you?
Overreacting? Listen, a rattling good read, George Galloway.
Irrelevant.
A masterpiece of sustained invective, Swiftian in its satire, and profoundly empiricist in its analysis.
Says who?
Carol Kaplan. And what about this? Deserves to be read by everyone who wants to know what is wrong with British politics. Gordon Brown.
Oh, dear.
This was written by the intellectual misfit who used to share your office.
Yes, but I...
And I bet it was written on Prentice McCabe premises in Prentice McCabe's time and on your headed notepaper.
Well, that is technically possible.
I want something done about this. I want this book discredited. I want Martin shafted. It's a shame in some ways, of course. We shall miss him. He was always the clever one.
Thank you so much.
No, Charles, I yield to no one in my admiration for your energy, your enthusiasm, and your total lack of any ethical sense whatsoever. You are an ethics-free zone. As such, you've been very useful to Number 10, but Martin does have a double first in philosophy.
It's odd he's never mentioned it, really, more than 37 times a day.
Charles, you have a job to do. Don't let loyalty stand in the way. Not that you ever do, of course, but I do not want to find every time I turn on my television I get bloody Martin and his flaming book.
Good evening. Later in tonight's programme, we'll be looking at the new Tarantino movie, The Boat Race. But first, the author of the book everyone is talking about. It's The Notion of Nation, and its author is Martin McCabe. Martin McCabe, much of the book is a sustained attack on Tony Blair, whom you call bewitched by billionaires and big business, a morally vacuous creep and a transparent pillock.
Yes.
On page one.
Yes.
But after the first four chapters, you digress into an outburst of vitriol about Americans for 200 pages. Why is that exactly?
Well, it's dirty work, but somebody's got to do it. I've been labouring under a self-denying ordinance for a long time. I've forbidden myself to be rude about Americans in any way. Frankly, it's been like wearing a chastity belt in an orgy, and all of a sudden the padlock snapped under sheer pressure of desire. One interview too many with Donald bloody Rumsfeld, and it was as if someone shook my bottle and my cork exploded.
In the middle section of the book, you return to your theme of the Prime Minister, whom you call a great loss to the acting profession and a dead loss in Downing Street. Now, the chapter from which that is taken, chapter 14, begins, I am writing this in the Jolly Hatters in Manchester.
Yes, chapter 14 is a particular favourite of mine because I don't remember writing it. Anyone who can remember chapter 14 wasn't there.
The book does, of course, become a sort of literary pub crawl rather than a serious philosophical work.
Yes, I did start to write a serious philosophical work. Then I suddenly realised I couldn't be asked.
Would you say that the later stages are almost Joycean in their stream of consciousness style?
I might say that, but only if I were very, very drunk.
Martin, how delightful.
Evening, Charles.
Your claret, monsieur.
Ah, splendid. Thank you, Maurice.
Maurice, monsieur.
Maurice, one man by circumstance is in splendour set, whilst another irons pants in a laundrette. Go and iron my pants, Maurice.
Oui, monsieur.
All well at Prentice McCabe?
Prentice and Associates nowadays.
Oh, I've been written out of history, have I?
You've passed the torch to the new generation.
Have I? I must say, I'd be wary of passing a torch to Clive on health and safety grounds alone, but still, you know best.
All well in the world of literary stardom?
Well, yes, I suppose so. Actually, it's a frightful bore doing all these media interviews.
Is it? Is it really?
You have no idea how tedious it becomes talking about yourself and getting paid for it.
How do I hate thee? Let me count the ways.
I'm sorry?
Martin, you and I were together a long, long time.
Oh, God, yes. Feels like several centuries, to be honest.
What was the glue, The cement that bound us through the years?
Your capacity for hard work and, well, modesty forbids.
Does it?
Well, no, it doesn't, really. The sheer quality of what people have been pleased to call my very fine intellect.
16.
Charles?
I'm still counting the ways in which I hate thee. I'm up to 17.
What's brought this on?
I've just come from a meeting with Archie.
Oh, the director of Doodah Thing and What's It?
He whose job title is well into its second series, and he gave me a commission. I've been wondering whether, in all decency, I could accept it.
Can I help at all?
My dear Martin, you already have.
So you'll do it, Charles?
Some people would have scruples about this.
That's not a problem in your case, though.
Now, give me credit. I did sit and ponder the morality of launching a smear campaign against a man who's been my partner for decades.
And?
And then I met up with the smug bastard.
So you'll start smearing?
Smear? I'm going to smear him with 2 tons of rhinoceros poo. I'm going to give him an exemplary seeing to, a monumental monstering, an almighty shafting. Do you know what he did this morning?
Something offensive?
Offensive. After 2 hours of ramming his fame and his millions down my throat, he turns and says, "The fact is, old boy, celebs don't carry cash. Will you pay for the claret?" The effrontery of it, the sheer brass neck. By the time I finish with him, people will be taking his benighted book back to the shop. There will be ceremonial book burnings in public squares. Effigies of Martin McCabe will hang from lampposts. Let me bring his grey hairs in sorrow to the grave.
I'm delighted to see a man so happy in his work. Charles, there is one thing.
Yes?
Downing Street Media Supremos don't carry cash. You couldn't pay for the coffee, could you?
Charles, I'm sorry to disturb you.
Never mind. Close the door on your way out.
But I've only just come in, Charles.
Clive, I gave the strictest instructions that I was not to be interrupted. I'm engaged in a task of wholesale character assassination, the destruction of a man's entire reputation and standing.
But there's a new client here.
Well, you deal with it, Clive. Remember, you are taking a greater share of responsibility in an effort to salvage your career. Clive, there are 2 types of employee. There is the positive, high-achieving, thunderbirds-are-go employee, and there is the negative, miserable employee who says, "Thunderbirds have gone and there isn't another one due for an hour and a quarter." Now, which are you?
I want to be positive, Charles.
Good.
But the thing is, I think she's a rich client.
Ah.
In fact, I think she's a rich, famous client.
Well, show her in, for pity's sake. Show her in.
Right. Would you come in, please?
Thank you.
Our senior partner, Charles Prentice.
Delighted.
My name is Clive, and I'm a positive Thunderbird.
Get out. Do sit down.
Thank you.
May I say that I'm an enormous fan of your...
books.
Yes, quite exactly, books. Absolutely, your cookery books.
Crime novels.
Yeah, I've read every single one of them.
Really? Which one is your favourite?
A Recipe for Murder? The Strange Affair of the Bang Bang Chicken? The Unpleasantness of the 5-Minute Tomato Soup for Busy Working Mums?
Mr. Prentice!
Charles, please.
Charles, it doesn't matter that you haven't actually read my books. I'm not looking for a star-struck fan. I think we may have a mutual interest. This is an advance copy of my new novel. It's due out in a fortnight. Perhaps you do me the courtesy of reading it.
Well, of course, but I'm not a publisher.
I already have a publisher, Charles. I already have a new murder victim, too.
Well, naturally, Martin, we're delighted. And, to be honest, not a little surprised. When we agreed to publish this book, we thought of it as an oddity?
Yes.
Well, one that we were proud to have on our list, of course, but... Well, I can only say that its success has taken us all by surprise.
Yes, I know just how you feel. I'd have been happy to publish 6 copies and send them to Oxfam shops.
I mean, you've managed to say things that, well, suddenly the entire country seems to have decided needed saying. I particularly liked your chapter on the decline of cabinet government. Old man Prescott, that old man Prescott, he must do something, he don't do nothing. And then you go into a discussion about roly-poly pudding in a pub in Hull.
Yes, the two did seem rather logically connected.
Yes, now, about the nationwide book tour.
The what?
The promotional tour, Martin, the book signings.
Oh, I don't think so, Charles, actually. Sounds terribly exhausting. It's not me at all.
It is in your contract.
Is it? Oh, Lord.
I mean, of course, it never occurred to us that the contingency would arise, but the response from bookshops has been overwhelming. You're going to sign so many books, your poor arm will drop off.
Oh, grief.
You're going to give so many interviews, you'll lose your voice.
Oh, hell's bells.
You're going to smile at so many fans, your face will get stuck in a permanent rictus. You'll be sick of the sight of hotel bedrooms. The price of literary celebrity, Martin.
Yes, well, look, you make it sound the most enticing prospect, and it's off, and so am I.
There is the chauffeur-driven limo.
Bar humbug.
And the unlimited vintage claret paid for by us. And the minders.
Minders? I've been carted around England by two tattooed thugs.
Tamsin and Catriona, delightful young girls.
Limo, claret...
Vintage.
And two young women.
Charming girls.
Well, I could sign the odd book.
Exactly.
Warble sweet nothings at interviewers.
Precisely.
It's the price of celebrity.
You'll do it.
I suppose someone's got to.
You see, the thing is, Charles, there are an awful lot of crime writers about, and you've got to get yourself noticed.
Yes, yes, I'm sure.
So when I started, I thought, I don't want to murder just anybody. I want to pick victims that everybody would like to murder. Well, not really, but at least in their fantasies. People who are just annoying. I mean, haven't you ever wanted to murder anybody?
Oh, heaps of people, all the time.
Exactly. So I started off with a serial killer who targets plumbers. Plunge to death. And it really struck a chord. I mean, you'd be just amazed how many people bought the book and said, I've always wanted to do that to a plumber.
What a bloodthirsty soul you are.
Well, not really. Anyway, then I thought about overpaid company directors, you know, the kind of people who pay themselves £1 million for being useless while keeping their staff on slave wages.
No, I can't say I've come across that type.
No?
No.
Well... I murdered them in some really gruesome ways. I called the book Animal Experiments and Fat Cats, and it was a tremendous success. Well, after that, there was no stopping me. My next one was Professional Discourtesy.
The victims?
Doctors' receptionists. And then I did Murder is Only a Game.
Now, I think I'm beginning to get the hang of this. Overpaid footballers.
Got it in one.
Yeah.
The Times called it a blood-strewn massacre of millionaire morons.
You're terribly happy in your work, aren't you?
Well, I was, but then I got stuck. I just couldn't think of anybody to murder.
Well, you must have made the odd penny or two. Couldn't you just retire to Dun Slaughtering and breed pit bulls or something?
No, really, no. I mean, I have made some money, only I'm quite good at spending it. Well, actually, I'm very good. Anyway, about 2 weeks ago, I got it. I suddenly realised who it is we'd all like to murder. Labour spin doctors.
Ah, hence the new book.
You've had a chance to read it?
Oh, yes, I've read it.
Well, anything strike you?
Well, one spin doctor in particular, the one who is murdered in an especially gruesome way.
Yes, good. What about him?
Fat, obnoxious, claret-swilling.
Yes.
Possessed of a certain shallow cleverness of mind, but lazy, really very lazy.
Isn't he?
And greedy. And outwardly amiable, but really, in the end, morally disgusting.
Does he remind you of anybody, Charles?
And the resemblance is not merely uncanny, it's unmistakable. Lydia, there is such a thing as the law of libel, you know.
And a defence of truth.
It's Martin to the life.
Isn't it?
I couldn't have done it better myself. And the way you murder him, in a manner that recalls his favourite meal.
It seems so appropriate.
Yes, there is a time and a place for a duck press. And there's a place that no man would want a duck press. How very painful.
And slow.
There's something intensely personal about this, isn't there? I mean... You knocked off 16 plumbers in an earlier work, but not like this.
I've never been married to a plumber.
I'm sorry?
We have an interest in common, Charles. Your ex-partner was my ex-partner. I was Martin McCabe's first wife. The bastard!
Martin, I know it's tiring. I know you've signed an awful lot of books in the past week or two.
Yes, I certainly have. Some more claret, please.
Certainly, sir.
But the thing is, you haven't signed all of them in your own name. A woman came up to me last night. She'd wanted you to sign a copy for her sister, and you'd written, "Yours in sport, the Dalai Lama." And then there was that poor woman in Yeovil, the one whose book you signed all the best, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm bored, John.
Well, I'm very sorry you're bored, but these are paying customers. Don't think of yourself as Martin McCabe. Think of yourself as product, as commodity. You're here to be packaged, marketed and sold.
But a large part of my book is an attack on global capitalism.
Martin, don't get me wrong. I love your attack on global capitalism. It's selling like hotcakes. But please, for the duration of this tour, you're here to do as you're told. Just sit there and sign books. No more schoolboy crudities. No more, I suppose, a shags out of the question signed Cliff Richard. No more limericks. And please, No more rudeness to interviewers. They're only doing their job.
What, asking stupid questions? Most of them clearly haven't read the book.
This is a marketing exercise. The interviews are part of that exercise, however tiresome. Martin, I'm counting on you to behave yourself.
Ah.
And hell hath no fury. That's your point?
That's precisely my point.
It's powerful stuff, I'll say that for it. He had the ear of the Prime Minister, but the snout of a pig.
He is a bloated spider, he lives in the dark, he hangs from the rafters like the giant bat of the Westminster Village.
To say nothing of his private life.
She does say rather a lot about his private life, of course.
Charles, when it gets out that Martin was the inspiration for this character, it'll destroy him.
I confidently expect some such outcome, certainly.
Well, nobody will take seriously moral strictures about Blair's Britain from this character.
I fear not.
He'll be a laughingstock.
A hissing and a byword.
The notion of nation will be totally discredited.
He will stand exposed as a philanderer, a charlatan, a humbug, a hypocrite, and the man who ate all the pies on the gravy train.
Good evening. Welcome to Books and Book People. There's been a twist this week in the biggest literary story of the year, Martin McCabe's surprise hit, The Notion of Nation. A new novel has appeared from McCabe's former wife, the crime writer Lydia Wycliffe, in which the central character is a Labour spin doctor and a creature of appalling moral depravity who is finally crushed to death in a duck press. Charles Prentice, you were Martin McCabe's business partner.
Yes, can I say at once that Martin and I have indeed been spin doctors. We've given advice to Downing Street. We've done so in a spirit of honesty, probity and morality, fully in keeping with our own principles and those of Tony Blair.
So how do you feel about these revelations?
It's not easy when you find that a man you've worked with... No, a man you have loved is a debauchee. A scoundrel, a cheat. I feel emotionally shattered, intellectually bereft. I feel let down, not angry, but terribly...
Charles Prentice.
I'm finished. Terribly. I've just... Will that do?
Martin, I'm sorry, but the book tour is off.
No more chauffeur-driven limo?
No more chauffeur-driven limo.
My female companions?
Yes, definitely not.
Oh.
Demonstrations are one thing. They may even help sales, but as your publishers, we draw the line at protesters roasting suckling pigs in Waterstones.
Especially when they won't give you any.
I'm sorry to have to say this, but frankly, you have been remaindered up the kilt.
The Burgundy is dry, the revenge is sweet.
And so are the royalties.
I gather even the Prime Minister is a fan of your novels. They make such a pleasant change from reading his own speeches and applauding himself.
Poor Martin.
You must hate him very deeply.
No, not really.
Some of the things you said in your book...
Well, I am a writer of fiction, Charles.
Yes, but the things you said about Martin weren't fiction.
Not all of them.
The philandering, the womanising...
Oh, Charles, can you imagine Martin philandering? He hasn't got the strength. I mean, can't you just hear him? Well, I was going to have an affair, but then I suddenly realised I couldn't be asked. That would be Martin. He wouldn't have the energy to be unfaithful. He didn't often have the energy to be faithful.
That's not the picture you paint in the novel.
It was too good an opportunity to miss. Charles, the sales of my last novel were none too good. People said I was getting formulaic. You know, picking yet another bunch of people and bumping them off. Serial murder's a bit of a cliché, frankly. It's been done.
Yes, yes, I suppose it has.
And then I thought, supposing I could make people believe that this one's based on truth, an act of revenge by a shamefully treated ex-wife. That'll shift some books, and it has.
But that's outrageous.
Yes, it is.
That's so evil, I could have thought of it.
I thought it would appeal.
But surely Martin could sue you.
Oh, Charles. Martin? He couldn't be asked.
I think this does count as one up to me, Martin.
Well, yes, I suppose to some extent it does.
You seem quite insufferably pleased with yourself. Your reputation is in tatters.
My reputation is like a packet of biscuits dropped from a skyscraper and sat on by a hippopotamus.
Your reputation is like a pork pie purchased at Heathrow and discovered in your pocket in Melbourne.
My reputation is like the decaying corpse of a rodent under the tacky floorboards of a human life.
Right. Your reputation is like a...
Yes?
is like...
Yes, I think decaying rodents beat pork pies, Charles.
Your reputation is like the used nappies of baby rodents fed on pork pies in the basement of a skyscraper used as a latrine by hippopotamuses. Checkmate.
Up to a point.
Martin, you're in the poo. What the hell are you looking so happy about? You're drunk.
Well, on 2.5 bottles of claret, Charles, I've got my reputation to think of.
Well, say the fascinating witches. All of it.
Very well. The fascinating witches who put the scintillating stitches in the breeches of the boys who put the powder on the noses of the faces of the ladies of the court of King Caractacus.
That proves it. Exactly. So, either you're Rolf Harris or you're legless. But, Martin, what are you so pleased about?
Well, I grant you, a day or two ago, things were looking a little sub-fusc. My career as a pundit and social commentator was none too good.
Quite.
So I needed a wheeze. I thought to myself, what would Charles Prentice do in this situation? Little video I'd like you to look at, Charles.
Coming soon to BBC One, the most obnoxious man in England, a new 26-part series.
26?
Featuring the life and times of Martin McCabe. Rascal, rogue and roué. Black sheep, randy goat, naughty boy. See the pubs he's been thrown out of, the beds he's been thrown into.
A 26-part series?
Based on my life and times. Rather a generous check, too.
But it's not true.
Stuff about beds and goats? No, of course not. Not true at all. Never worried us in the past, though, has it? Well, I had to come up with something, Charles, and people do love naughty boys, you know. They might not want them prating and pontificating about the moral decay of Blair's Britain.
At Prentice McCabe, we've always prided ourselves on being the moral decay of Blair's Britain.
Quite so. And I can't wait to get back to it. I'll be in on Monday.
At work? Oh, Martin, I hardly think so. Your standing in Downing Street is not good.
Not even with an enormous check for the election fighting fund.
Ah, an enormous check.
The royalties from the book. The money from a 26-part series. It adds up to a couple of million. Or is it three? One does lose count.
Oh, does one?
Sorry, Charles, that was rather nauseating. But then I am the most obnoxious man in England.
You've been listening to Absolute Power by Mark Tavner, starring Stephen Fry and John Byrne, with Alex Lowe, Tom George, Helen Atkinson-Wood, Kim Wall, Rachel Atkins and Jamie Barbacott. The music was by Matthew Scott and the producer was Dawn Ellis. Thank you.